today, we continue, actually we are ending our series on the creative process based on the first story in Genesis. And we've discussed the last few weeks patterns in the creation story, that God creates through the power of the word, often saying, "Let there be," and that God calls all creation, everything created, good, and blesses or confers good upon that which has been created. And this seven-day creation story depicts the great creative mind at work, showing us how divine ideas are brought into expression. All manifestation begins in the realm of ideas, and this particular story describes the spiritual ideal creation, giving us the model to bring divine ideas into expression in our lives. It's really in the second creation story that we'll look at next week that those ideas begin to manifest. And before we discuss day seven, let's review, because I know we have some people here today for the first time and we welcome you. Let's review for a moment the entire process quickly. You should have found in your bulletin the handout that I've been promising. Everybody has it? Yours is a kind of a buff color, mine is white. And so there is the whole process, just a summary of it. Remember, in the beginning, there was void and darkness. So the creation begins really in chaos. And God says what? Oh, you all are so good. I'm proud of you. Very good. Let there be light, and there was light. And light represents metaphysically awareness or illumination. There's always light beyond the darkness. There's always guidance beyond the chaos. And our job is simply to focus away from the darkness toward the light. And on day two, the firmament appears. Remember the dome that the early Hebrews believed separated the heavens from the earth? And that firmament, that dome, represents faith. Faith is our affirmative power, the ability to believe and perceive in infinite possibilities. And then on day three, the land, the seas, and the vegetation appear, and they represent our power of imagination. Imagination is closely linked to faith, because in imagination, we take what we believe and perceive to be true, and we form mental images about it to allow us to bring it into our lives. And then on day four, the two great lights appear. Remember? The greater light of the sun, representing spiritual understanding, and the lesser light of the moon, representing will. And when our will, which is our executive power, when our will is aligned with spiritual understanding, we're able to bring forth the good. And on day five, the first creatures appear, and what were they? Fishes and fowl. I don't have to do the little thing this week. That's very good. And they represent judgment, discernment, and dominion. And that means that we execute, we use righteous judgment. We discern between human and spiritual realms because we are part of both. And we judge from the truth of our being. We know that we have power over our thinking and our feelings. And we absolutely know that we cannot hold goodness for ourselves without sending anything less to the rest of humankind. So that's an important power of judgment. And day five, the additional creatures appear, including, finally, human beings. And that day represents the power of love, perhaps the greatest spiritual power of all. When we know that we are created in the image and likeness of God, we know that we are divine love. And we just temper that divine love with wisdom. And that is what makes the whole creative process work. And so before we get to day seven, I just have to say, all along I've been saying we're studying the first creation story as in the first chapter of Genesis, but that was not entirely true. All of the first 6 days are in Genesis 1, but the seventh day actually shows up in Genesis 2, which is interesting. And it is, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all their multitude." Now about that word multitude, some versions say hosts, and Bible scholars tell us that the word multitude or host really meant powers, but they were the powers of the sun and the moon and the stars. So that makes sense in terms of what we've studied. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, which means made it holy, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. And so, on day seven, God rests from all the effort. And the thing is, anytime we want to move into Bible interpretation, to get beyond the literal to the metaphysical, one thing that we can do is just ask ourselves, what are our burning questions about the text? And you might have yours, and they might be different from the ones I'm going to talk about, but typical burning questions might include, why 7 days for creation? Did you ever think about that? Why not 5, or 10, or 12, or 30? Well, we know that the early Hebrew people believed that numbers held great symbolic meaning, and the number 7 is one of the most sacred numbers in the Bible. It represents spiritual completion and perfection. And in the Revealing Word, Charles Fillmore tells us that the number 7 represents fullness in a world of phenomena. It refers to the divine law of perfection for the divine natural human, that we are both divine and human. So it's fitting, really, that divine mind completes that plan and consciousness on day 7. And even though there is no outer manifestation yet, this is all going on in mind, we are on the brink of it. Our next, even more compelling question might be, what is all this hard work causing God to need a rest? We read simply that it says, let there be, and there was. Does that sound like hard work for the Almighty? Not to me. Does this make a day of rest necessary? And we may ask a more significant question about the nature of God. Is God one who gets tired? Or is God one who is omnipotent, all-powerful, and all-power? How is it that pure divine energy, all that there is, divine omnipotence, experiences fatigue? It just doesn't compute, does it? Well, for one thing, it sounds like a very human need, right? It sounds like one of those typical old anthropomorphic tales about God being more created in our image than us being created in the image and likeness of spirit. And more importantly, this kind of proves to us that day 7 is purely symbolic, a representation of the creative process now being finished. The text says, and it is finished. And the story ends with, and God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, or called it holy. So day 7 of this stage of the creative process has been throughout all of eternity since then called the Sabbath. Now, over the centuries, the original, relatively simple term of Sabbath, which simply meant a day of rest, was increasingly embellished as the years went by with lots of prohibitions, rituals, and ceremonies of rabbinical tradition. Bible scholars tell us that the exalted idea of the Sabbath was one of the results of the Babylonian exile, and that meant it happened around 580 BCE. It was then that the keeping of the Sabbath became one of the great marks of being a Jew. Early Hebrews followed the law handed down to Moses as part of the Ten Commandments, and this is familiar to us. This is commandment number 4. Which reads, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to your Lord, your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Now eventually the literalists took this to mean that it was actually a sin to do anything productive on the Sabbath, even lighting a lamp or gathering and preparing food. But as usual, Jesus saw it differently. When challenged by the Pharisees for allowing his disciples to pluck heads of grain for food on the Sabbath, anybody remember what he said? He said, the Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath. In the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, Charles Fillmore says, "The true Sabbath is the consciousness that we have fulfilled the divine law in thought." The Sabbath is a very definite thing, he says. It's a state of mind we enter into, the silence, the realm of spirit. There we find true peace and rest. In the true Sabbath, our mind is turned to God every moment, and we are ever ready to acknowledge divine spirit's holy presence in our heart and in our life. I found this the other day in the archives, in the Unity Archives. It's Charles Fillmore's own handwritten note on a Sunday lesson he did in 1916, and it reads, "The use of the Sabbath, silence, is when I rest in the consciousness of the omnipresence. I am observing the Sabbath day." And we might look at this view. He's not too swift with most of the Ten Commandments, but he does rest on Sunday. Okay? Well, actually, the creative process is not even about strictly that kind of rest. It's certainly not about laziness. It isn't about resting perfectly. Instead, it is about resting in the one who is perfect. Rest is where we trust and let go. And this is where we stop our human struggle and let the seeds we have planted take root and manifest. And for some of us, this is the hardest stage of all. We are inclined to plant the seed, and then in human consciousness, what do? We dig it up, don't we? We dig it up just to see how it's going, and that never, ever works. But how do we refrain from worrying about or tinkering with the work that we've already done? How do we keep from continually taking back all of those things that we know in our hearts we need to release? Well, at this point of the process, we enter into prayer and meditation and find peace and relaxation by communing with our one true source. In prayer, we let go and let God take over. How many times do we say that? We reach this state of gratitude for our ability to work through the creative process. And then we are able to release the how to spirit, knowing that our greater good is unfolding. And by the way, this is exactly why our prayer chaplains do not come back to us after praying and ask how things are going. I mean, we don't say, well, how's your knee going? How's your knee? Or how's your mom's illness? Or how's God doing with your prosperity problem? We don't check up on God. We pray, we release, and we let it go. Now, having said that, if people need additional prayers, the chaplains are there to continue praying, but we don't check up on it. Charles Fillmore wrote in The Mysteries of Genesis, "In a Sabbath state of mind, we turn within, and we know that we've done all we need to do. We have completed the other six steps of the creative process. It is finished. It's now time to turn any concerns that we have over to spirit and to rest from further mental activity. In other words, it's our time to let go and let God, through the power of our own indwelling Christ, do the work. We have reached fulfillment and now just rest in the assurance that what has been imagined will be manifested. We don't need any physical evidence that it's there. We just become centered in the rich resources of our inner world, and then we become confident that the good is going to be expressed in our outer world." This is what takes us to that first stage. Remember the Lazarus blueprint of the upfront thanks, that stage? This is what takes us there, and it's the foundation of affirmative prayer practiced by Jesus. And when we're able to do this, a great weight is lifted from our shoulders as we turn our dreams and desires over to the divine instead of holding on to them. This is exactly what Emmett Fox means in The Golden Key when he says, instead of focusing on the problem, we focus on God, the divine. That's exactly right. Actually, I had another story to tell, but a more current one happened this morning, so I'm going to switch my story. I got here this morning. Bob and I got here early, and I set up all my equipment, and I was ready to go. And guess what? My computer was as black as could be. Black as could be, like nothing. We unplugged everything. We plugged it back in. I did my famous trick of turning it off and on again, and that did not work. You know, that's my only trick I know. That did not work. And so I fiddled with it for quite maybe like 10 or 15 minutes, and finally I said, okay, it's all right. I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to release it. It's okay. Today we will just do it without the pictures if that's meant to be. And I swear to you, in that moment, I hit it one more time and it came on. It's amazing when we can just release it and let it go. Sometimes when we're so uptight about things, we're blocking the flow of our good. And so I'm sure you can all think of stories in your life when that have happened. Actually, when that happens, sometimes I didn't this morning, but sometimes what flashes in my head, the same thing happened to me, the story I was going to tell recently, at home where I walked into my office and my computer was sizzling like bacon. I'm not kidding. It sounded like bacon frying. It's never a good thing when your computer is sizzling with bacon. And in that particular sense, I was right in the middle of this huge project that had to be done. It had to be done that day. And I just, you know, got all stressed. You know how you do when you just kind of lose it. I got stressed. And then all of a sudden, I just said, okay, I'm going to release this. I'm going to let it go. I went out on the deck, and I stood for a few minutes, and the sunshine hit my face. I just prayed, and I walked back in, and the same thing happened. It worked perfectly. So it just works. And what flashed in my mind that day as I was standing on the deck was, it is not I, but the Father within who does the work. That's one of my favorite Bible quotes. It's not I, but the Father within who does the work. A true Sabbath is that state of consciousness where we stop all personal struggle and rest in knowing that the Christ within does the work. I want to read to you today something that's a little bit unique. This is from the book A Recent Revelation. I'll show you the title of it. It looks like A Recent Revelation by Jim Rosmerge, and it is all written in the voice of Jesus. And I want to read you excerpt, not the whole thing because it's long, but excerpts from the Sabbath in the voice of Jesus. You have made a ritual of something that does not exist. The Sabbath is not a day. In spirit, there is no time. There is only the eternal now. And as you dwell upon the earth, the eternal now is as close as you will ever venture into the realization of eternity. Yes, the Sabbath is part of all eternity, for it is part of the creative process. To teach you that the Sabbath is a phase of the creative process, I healed persons on what you understood to be the Sabbath. If you look beyond your rituals, you will remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. To fulfill this commandment, you must know the spiritual meaning of the Sabbath. It is a state of mind in which you rest from your activity and let the Father do the work. Lift up your eyes as I have, and you will see the Sabbath in the soaring eagle. The eagle climbs until he feels himself gently lifted up by the winds, and then he rests and allows the unseen force to carry him. The eagle knows the meaning of the Sabbath, but sometimes you do not. As a child, you knew the Sabbath and how to keep it. As a child, you released a seed and allowed it to rest within the earth. You tenderly covered it with moist soil and waited for the first blade to tell you about new growth. The wisdom of a child is like the wisdom of a saint. For the little one does not uncover the seed each day to see if it is growing. Instead, he waits in anticipation for the evidence of the activity of life. The Sabbath is that time in which you rest and wait for the new life. Can you not see that the Father did exactly that same thing on the seventh day in the creation story? The Sabbath is that last stage of any creative act. For you and me, it is a state of mind in which we rest from our activity and allow the activity of spirit to move through us. When you know this, you too will say, my Father is working still. I have watched many of you pray, and sometimes your prayers are not answered because you will not enter into the Sabbath. To honor the Sabbath, you must let go and let the Father's work be done. You did it as little children when you planted the seed. Will you do it now? If you seek healing, pray, rest from doubt, and allow.